Hi, I'm Clint Webb, and I'm running for Senate. I have a short cropped haircut, a pretty enough yet accessible looking wife, and a newborn baby that I've dressed in a suit to prove to you that I mean business. For the last 15 years, I've lived my life in such a bland, uncontroversial, and repressed manner that it's almost unnatural. Why? Because I've been preparing to be your representative since I was a child. Most well-adjusted, sane men would be hesitant to take a job where their decisions would so drastically affect the lives of so many. But not me. I possess a sort of sociopathic narcissism that makes me think that I should be in charge of everyone. But all of that needs to start here at home, in this beautiful state that I've grown to love since I moved here 18 months ago. Together, we can piggyback some of our state's legitimate needs onto my unquenchable lust for self-glorification. And that's a promise.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence. You know, one thing that I've been doing, we haven't spent enough time on what's going on with the people in Japan. We're working on that. We're getting some people, let it settle down, and we really want to do more on it. Last night, I did a special radio program with Robert Anderson. He's a very good friend of mine and one of the older activists when we were in our 20s, you know, young back in the early 90s. He and I had done a lot of things together, and he moved out by Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant because he's a supervisor out there in the fuel department. I remember 29 years he's been doing this. Four of those years, he was on the USS Enterprise. So he got an up-close and personal straddling the reactor kind of thing. Got a job out at Palo Verde, one of the latest, most high-tech, largest nuclear power plants in America. Now, he's one of the boys out there. And I wanted to have him kind of, you know, give us from inside the industry view on what's going on in Japan and should we be worried and what does it mean for the future of the nuclear power industry. But he really had a lot of concern for the people of Japan. And the reason is because, I mean, it's devastating what's happened. You see the videos, and we really haven't done it justice. I'm going to let it go for a while, and we'll go ahead and talk about it. But I asked George to stay over in the second hour a little bit to give him an opportunity to, you know, what we're looking to do. I would think as we get more into agorist-type living, we're insulated from a lot of these problems that will happen, a devastating thing in another country or in another state or remote from us, even in the same country here, how we can be insulated from the effects instead of having this homogenized society that we all must suffer. And when somebody does like Katrina, that we have people that, if allowed, would help. And we went through this. I remember we were covering it on the radio as Katrina was happening, and there were over 600 bass boats on the road going, knowing what they needed. They need people in boats to go save them from their rooftops. And what happened? FEMA and military with M16s on the road saying, turn around. You're not allowed. You're not allowed to help. We'll take care of it. We'll get Walmart, give us some water in this one place, and everybody get into the Superdome, and we'll take care of you. Promise, pinky swear. And how'd that work out? So I wanted, from that kind of perspective and just a human perspective, ask George, you know, what's your opinion of what's going on and what we should we take from it? Should we be doing anything? You know, what do you think about it?
I don't know what we really can do other than maybe send money, because it's so far away and it's so the affected areas are so inaccessible. But I think the real takeaway here is the complete incompetency of governments and government-created corporations, you know, to handle situations like this. They're just not accountable. The TEPCO, the electric company here that runs the reactors, has been hiding information. And, you know, in the first place, just looking at it in a basic way, why did they put all those reactors on the Pacific side of Japan, right next to that huge earthquake fault line? You know, who decided that? And who allowed them to put it there? That should be on the Sea of Japan side. I mean, Japan has a long history of earthquakes. Everybody knows this. I lived in Japan for 4 years, and earthquakes are just a fact of life. And so, you know, not only just the decision of where to put it and how to run it, and the fact that they have 40 years of nuclear waste on site, 600,000 of these fuel rods just waiting for the water to leak away and start burning. You know, who allowed that to happen? And who is going to answer for this tremendous irresponsibility? You know, it's government and government-created corporations that have really created this situation, allowed it to fester, and, you know, because of the way they operate, we don't really have a way to hold them accountable. And the way nuclear power works, or at least a nuclear disaster is, has the potential to affect the whole world. There's no way to escape from it. It's simply shocking. It's just amazing how this has unfolded over the last few days.
You lived 4 years in Japan? Why?
Yeah. Why? I was bored in the U.S. I had a couple friends over there. And, you know, I'm kind of an explorer by nature. I'm talking to you now from South America. So, I just wanted to go over there, see what it was like. You know, the only thing I knew about Japan before that was World War II and the nuclear bombs and all that. So
you're in South America now? You got to tell me about that. You can't let that whiz by. Where at?
Yes, sir. Medellin, Colombia.
Wow. What are you doing there?
It's so beautiful here. They call it the city of the eternal spring. A Colombian friend of mine, brought me here about 17 years ago, and I just loved it. And so I kept visiting, and after I was done in Japan, I came here and started working as an English teacher, and just couldn't leave. Got married, had my son here. You know, it's so nice to explore outside of the U.S. because it really affects your view of the world. It's really educational.
You know, we had Butler Schaefer in on Monday, and one of the things we're going to be talking about, he was a real inspiration in the living room, just chilling with the guys, and Nick and Drew got inspired by him, and we're going to be talking about it a little bit today. But in going around the world, that's one of the gentlemen that we're going to have, the sovereign man, a guy named, goes by the pen name Simon Black, and we put a lot of his stuff up on Freedom's Phoenix, and he's talking about traveling the world. And the one thing he said about Japan is, he goes, it used to have this stereotype of how expensive it was, and he was finding that when he went there here recently, just a month or two ago, that how comparative it was with the U.S. and Europe in the cost of things, and that's really come down. So I the Japanese people, though, I want to ask you that question. The Japanese people, their culture, and they are kind of raised in this more collectivist mindset of duty to society, and I remember that becoming a big issue in the mid-90s. I was interviewed by it's kind of like their version of 60 Minutes on gun issues and so on. And the first thing I had to do is explain to them that we're a different culture here. Our government, it was solely supported on the promise that they are there to protect individual rights and that the collective is not their primary concern. Where in Japan, they have a totally different mindset. How does that play into this?
Yeah, there's a mindset of kind of obedience, too much obedience, conformity, because it's a very homogenous culture. And so it's very easy for things to go wrong, because you don't see a lot of people standing up and saying something is wrong when it's actually wrong. They have a saying, the nail that sticks up gets hammered down.
Yeah, we know that here.
yeah, that is like a bedrock for their culture. So nobody stands up, or very rarely does anyone stand up and say, hey, something's wrong here, and we got to do something about
it. Well, the youth may be doing that. I remember there was an article on Freedom's Phoenix that was talking about, yeah, you free market guys, see, now the free market and nuclear energy, they've done this, and look what happened, and so on. And Glenn Jacobs, a good libertarian friend of ours, he came out and he said, really? Really? When has there been a free... Who would insure a nuclear power plant? Well, without government limits on liability, how the heck would they even do it unless they were able to convince someone that was investing in the insurance to make sure these things didn't happen? You know, it's always freedom's the answer. What's the question? Well, a big freedom advocate, George Donnelly, it's been a pleasure spending time with you. And, you know I know I can go back and talk to you about some other things.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. In studio, Drew Phillips is he wants me to state it after he gets me, you know, a couple more buttons flipped and switched. His dime obligation is over. Is over. Yeah, Nick, Drew, you guys happy now? You get me all hooked up here. Done. Yeah, I'm sure we can, you know, muster some other goodies out of you. But you know, okay, you have been relieved of your responsibility. You happy?
Well, yeah, now we get to use all your goodies for the Agora.io broadcasting. We'll broadcast from the command bunker here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, see, that was your motivation, okay? Yeah, he wanted to make sure that he got, you know, we'll go ahead and have this all set up so we can use it. Well, whatever motivation, I don't care. As long as I get to do it.
No, so Nick's chatting with me here, on just texting me about the Ustream. It's working, and... We can hear you during the break.
Oh, yeah. Reminder. So. You go to the Ustream, you get the real Ernie, you know, during the break. You know, just, what we did is we wanted to have the ability to have this be really a one-person show. Now, of course, I have to have Sierra, you know, help with the producing and calling deal. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into doing a show and contacting these people and so on, but... It's to be able to do it without a board op, and it's easier because we haven't been taking phone calls, and that's the next thing that we really need to work on. And there's different technologies, and we have all the high end equipment, man. We got it going on. We can do it. The thing is that a lot of times when I first started doing radio, we just blew up the phones. I mean, because it was just libertarian in a major market for the first time, and they're like, wow, what's that? So I spent a lot of time explaining, you know, always challenging the callers that were, you know, the neocons. Yeah, but don't you think, and the war and all this kind of stuff. So that was very educational and it was fun. The thing is that I as we get a lot of the guests that we have, I will select a lot of the neocons, a lot of the liberals, the progressives and so on. And that's why people listen to the show, they know what I'm going to say. Yeah, but the thing is that these guys have never heard this kind of thing before. They're always getting more of the talk show industry, neocon, progressive, one side or the other. And they rarely do they come on a show where they're advocating for whatever, fill in the blank, unions, military, fly, no fly zone, what's going on with the State Department in the Middle East. We had a gentleman just this week talking about, as the Saudi Arabian military and the United Arab Emirates police forces, 1,500 people killing the people in the streets in Bahrain that he is advocating against right now, as they're doing that, he gets exposed to a libertarian perspective. This is what this show is for. It's educational, I'm sure, to a lot of the listeners to see how you can answer and banter with these guys. But the thing is that I'm really trying to infect them. Because when they go and espouse, I give you a perfect example. When you're dealing with the DREAM Act people, illegal immigration and so on, The one thing that I really have seen it starting to penetrate and become part of the rhetoric is that someone that wants to immigrate here, I'm going, if you, as long as you advocate that you're not willing to take anybody's tax money, no welfare, you know, no programs, heck, you'll even educate your own kid. What you do that, you become the best Americans. You know, you're better than the citizens here because you're not advocating taking my money. So if you were to do that, if you were to make that part of the condition under which you would be able to live here, man, you're my bestest buddy. So they jump all over that. They start to, you know, forward that idea. Well, of course, then you find out when the congressmen and so on doing the rhetoric, oh, well, you're taking it. We don't want. We're good. We'll take care of ourselves. We just want a job. We just want to it not be illegal for me to, like, you know, stand here, you know, in the public thoroughfare. You know, that's illegal for me to just, you know, exist in this area, you know. So doing that has a big impact. Well, one of those people that really has had a big influence on me over the years and was the law professor of Mark J. Victor, my partner on the Freedom Summit. Now, he came in Monday, and we just got to hang. He and his wife, Jane, we've been friends for a long time. And Butler came in here and hung out. And Drew and Nick were here doing a lot of the work, finishing up on the studio. And we weren't ready to have them recorded on video, and that's kind of sad. But we got a really great show out of it. Now, after the show, Butler got to hang out in the living room and just sitting there talking. And Drew and Nick, man, I'm like, all right, go for it. I'm going to go off and I got something else to do. Go grill them, man. Have fun. Because I remember Ben Nichols, you know, another young activist. He's a student. He's going to graduate this year, I think, at ASU political science. I don't know what's up with that. But very smart young man. He went to the Liberty Forum in New Hampshire with me last year. And he has a lot of friends on the internet. He's heavy into Facebook. He does a lot of good activism there. And he is a big, giant fan of Butler Schaefer. Well, a lot of these guys, you know, some of them are the last of their breed, the last of their generation. From the Freedom College that was in Colorado, that was, you know, Leonard Reed's thing. And those guys, that era, those activists, those libertarians, those anarchists, Butler Schaefer is the last one. He goes, yeah, I'm the last one, man. All these guys, they're dying off. And I said, you know, we got to get you on. Mark Victor said, you know, let's do that. So in April, one weekend when he has time, he's going to be speaking next weekend. We'd have him come for the big birthday bash we're doing, Top of the Hill party. And he's going to be in another state doing a presentation. So the following weekend or one after that, he's going to come here. Before we lose Butler, we want to make sure we get him on camera in an interview, however long it takes, hours and hours, to give us the history of this movement. In just an hour or so, I finally just had time to sit there and talk and give me who's this guy? Where'd he come from? How come I always hear? Oh, we were talking a lot about the Koch brothers, and he referred to them as the Kochtopus. You know, these guys have started Cato and so on. And I, as I do this activism, they keep coming up, and they're always, whenever there is a creation of a movement, because they got billions of dollars, they can do what they want. They go and they incorporate it. They wrap themselves around it. They get on the board of directors. They're always wanting to control and direct for some political advantage or whatever it is that they want to accomplish. And one thing that Butler certainly acknowledges and I understand is the voluntarist, this agorist mentality that came out of the Levolution that was always there. It was just became so obvious how broke the political system is. It doesn't work. It doesn't give an opportunity for people to be represented. And it's happening all over the world. Those that are advocating for some kind of organized political state directed, allowed, permission slipped kind of revolution, you know, you're not going to get that. And that's why I was so heartened by the fact that when Clinton went to meet with the young opposition leaders in Cairo and they go, go away. We don't want to talk to you. What do we want to talk to you about? You know, be gone with you. So when we come back, we're going to get some input from Drew. Maybe we can get Nick to call in, and we'll go ahead and talk about how they were inspired and some ideas they have from just one little conversation with someone like Butler Schaefer. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, Drew, maybe Nick, just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm me, Ernest Hancock, here each and every day on the LRN.FM network from Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedom's Phoenix Farm, where we got chickens, 20, just got three goats, lawnmowers, and we plowed some fields so that we can plant tobacco. Yeah, we're going to be growing our own cigars. You know, Freedom's Phoenix cigars. You know, that's what we're doing. Oh, is that what was going on? Are you kidding me? Here's Nick Barnett. You know, no. Nick Abdullah, the whatever his name is. You know, are you serious? Is this how you're going to do it?
No, I just got a new tactical scarf and I had to try it on.
I'm going, where the heck is Nick? What the heck is he doing? You know, go ahead and, you know, that's Nick Barnett. There you go. That's the guy I know. You know, now he looks like the revolutionary flower throwing guy. You know, let's go ahead and talk about, you know, start off with Drew here. Tell us what inspired you by meeting with Butler. I mean, he's a very inspirational guy. He's a great writer. And he's really inspirational in just, yeah, well, of course government sucks.
I mean, wait a minute, man. I drove 50 miles here, and Nick gets to do this over Skype. Now that he's online, is our debt paid?
You know, he's really into this debt. You know, let me tell you.
I don't like having debt over my head.
It's done, okay? It's done. Done.
Well,
like
see,
I was ever going to get it back anyway.
So like I was saying, you know, Butler Schaefer, that'll motivate me to drive 50 miles to come down and hang out with you guys for an afternoon. So that was a really fun experience. We did enjoy that and getting to spend a little time.
Well,
with
I them. Wasn't there during your conversation. You know, I had to go do other stuff and I wanted me not there and you guys to just have fun without, you know, Ernie butting in. You know, tell me what kind of conversation you had. What was discussed?
I mean, you know, like I said to him, you know, you're the most hardcore anarchist I've ever seen present. So I don't think I have anything I could fault you on. You certainly know more than I do. And, you know, Nick asked him a few questions and such. And we just got to chatting. And oh, and by the way, he really liked the dime cards idea. Actually, his wife liked the dime cards.
They buy any from you?
Sure did.
And they leave you any?
and I gave him the best deal in town because he's Butler Schaefer. I'd be a fool not to.
Because he's Butler Schaefer.
And, well, and now he's passing them out or showing them, at least in Southern California. So
win one for me. You know what the other thing was is that we didn't have them loaded into our duplicators. I thought we did. And Sierra had created I got to tell this story. In 2004, when I was running against John McCain, there was the editorial page editor of the Arizona Republic, right towards the end of the campaign. He calls me and he says, "Hey, Ernie, man, you know, maybe you can help me out with this. I remember when I was in college, there was an Oscar-winning movie. And it was a short documentary about Carl Hess. Carl Hess used to be the speechwriter for Goldwater. And he went, you know, anarchist, you know, over the years, you know, libertarian. He was involved in the Libertarian Party stuff for a while. And he just kind of like, I'm out of here." And what got him in trouble is he cited the Fourth Amendment, sent his tax return to IRS, said, "Bite me. I'm not doing it. You don't need it. I don't recognize your authority," and kiss it. And they went, "Oh, heck no." They're going, no. They attached his wages for like the rest of his life. So he learned agorism. He went anarchist. He built his own home. He got totally off grid. He bartered. He learned to weld. While he's welding, what he would do is go and he wrote for a Washington, D.C. based publication for he and Goldwater was associated with. And he'd be all, you know, greasy, fingered up and everything, take a bath real quick, run down, do something, write and do and put it. So he was involved. He was one of us back in the day. Well, he used to walk around with, sometimes he'd have like these army boots and so on. So, like, oh, he's Fidel Castro, you know, he's an anti-government, whatever.
And because of that, that's where the non-aggression principle kind of got instilled in the pledge in the Libertarian Party. I do not advocate the initiation of force or fraud for political, social, economic gain. And it was because of this, you know, this rhetoric they tried to associate libertarians with. Now it's coming the other way. They're going, hey, man, we're not militaristic enough to go after radical Islam and all that kind of stuff. So it's just we're always consistent. And that's been the best defense against a kryptonite they would have against Superman's philosophy. Now, what happened is he got older and they did a movie about it. It's called Toward Liberty, Carl Hess. Or Carl Hess Toward Liberty. The editor of the Arizona Republic asked if I even heard about it. I never even heard about it. And he said, yeah, you got it listed there as a winner, but you can't find it anywhere. And would I put it out to my contacts and see what happened? Well, I did email blast out, and this was 6 years ago, and I got a reply from Carl Hess's son. And they had a 16-millimeter old film version of it that they put onto VHS. So it wasn't like the greatest quality in the world. They sent it to me. And this is back in the early days of digitizing video. You know, I mean, I didn't, you know, so I was able finally after, I mean, it must have taken me 40 hours of trying to get Pinnacle to work. And finally got it digitized on the computer. And there it sat. We put it up on YouTube a few years ago. And just so it didn't get lost. Then the people that made the movie said, oh, that's ours, man. You know, take it down. So it got taken down off of YouTube. Well, we had the files and we got a professor in Riverside. I thought it was in the Midwest somewhere. Sierra says it was in Riverside, California. And this professor says, you know, I heard from the grapevine that you have a copy of this. And I go, well, I can. We can put it together and so on. So Sierra, she's learned how to edit video and so on. She put it together, made a DVD, sent it to him. Well, he's, you know, making whatever copies, showing it to his students and so on. And it's a great film that give you really how long this agorist thing has been going on. Way longer than people realize. And it's all about self-sustainability and that kind of thing. Well, we went ahead and loaded it into the duplicator and we sent, you know, because we didn't have it ready right then. Butler Schaefer left and we sent it yesterday with to him, I don't know, probably a dozen or two copies of it for him to share with the people that he knows. And Butler knows lots of people. And this film almost winked out of existence. It almost just was never heard from again. Because the guys that made it, I got the impression they were more progressive. They're the left version of anarchist. We don't want anybody to have anything, so everybody has something or so. I'm not really sure how they view anarchism that way, but it's not the way that we would. And that's why, and that's one thing Butler was explaining, autocracy was a word that was used a lot in, you know, 10 years ago, which meant self-rule. So this is kind of the atmosphere that we're in while Drew and Nick is talking to him. And I got a lot of things from we're going to do for the video that we'll do with them, the history of anarchism, voluntarism, agorism, I don't want to be part of themism, you know, and how it's been going on for 40, 50 years. Now, he graduated college in the 50s, and he remembers, you know, he's part of the, you know, Freedom College back in Colorado back in the day, enormous amount of history, and knows where all the skeletons are, who played what role as we get now, and why a lot of these guys are still there pulling strings behind the scenes. So we have a new generation that's coming that's well represented by Drew and Nick and a lot of things that they're doing. So I want to ask, you know, we got a few minutes left in this segment. Nick, tell me, man, what did you guys talk about and what did you get out of it?
Well, he was talking about how he used to be a conservative, and his first intro into politics was when he worked on Barry Goldwater's campaign in 1964. So he was telling us a little bit about that, and I was like, oh, you worked with Goldwater. Did you know Carl Hess? So that's when we got onto this Carl Hess thing. And that was, you know, he had some pretty cool stories. He was like, you know, he was good friends with the guy. And he was also good friends with Sam Konkin and Murray Rothbard and all these, like, founding people of modern libertarian movement. It was just amazing to be able to talk to him.
When we come back, I want to get more about that conversation and how it's inspired him, what their next project's going to be. Because I tell you, these people right now, are where the mantle is being passed to, and I feel really good about it. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity.
Yeah, defying the laws. All even gravity. You know, give me a chance. I'll defy that one too. If I can. Well, we're talking with Drew Phillips and Nick Barnett via Skype, and there was an opportunity a lot of young anarchist activists don't get. They don't get to talk to, you know, icons like Butler Schaefer. And it wasn't, and, you know, I've known Butler for years before I had an idea of just how popular, yeah, you messed it up, man, just how popular he was and how well known he was amongst the young. So this is, you just messed him up.
No, he already dropped.
Okay. So what we're going to go ahead and do is go back. Oh, he's calling Nick back now to get you back on. Can you hear me, Nick? Yeah, okay, he knows. Well, he's going to call and get you back on. Because what I wanted to do is make sure that you get the impression from these young minds that have not had the opportunity to meet with such icons like this. Because I had the experience of just from the ground before the internet. It was something that was self-taught, and you met some people, and it became an opportunity for me to express. Do you need me to do this? Do you know what to do?
I got it.
No, you just hung up on him again. Sierra, come do this. Go ahead and get on the mic. Go ahead and tell us about the conversation right now. Go ahead and let her do it. There you go.
It was not necessary to dial a one. Okay, relax, buddy.
Sierra.
We'll get you on there, Nick. It was very enjoyable to speak to Butler Schaefer this weekend, or this past, whenever it was, Monday. So he did, I'll spoil this. Nick and I just came up with this last night, and he shared a story of the Huntington flag. It was one of the original rebellious flags of the revolutionary period. And what it was essentially the Union Jack, and they ripped off all the blue and white, and so it was just a red flag, and then they took the white, what was left of it, and they stitched Liberty into this red flag.
Back in the day, they would, you know, they didn't have a way to print and dye flags the way that they do now. So they would start with just a red background, and then they would go and paste on the blue and paste on the white. So you've got big triangles of blue, and you've got thin stripes of white, and they ripped all those off, so they were just left with red.
And then what?
Well, you got to wait for the video.
Oh, so that's what this is, your little secret thing.
Without spoiling Nick's awesome, even awesomer idea yesterday when we were talking about this, they will be for sale at Porkfest. So there you go.
Oh, is this something you guys are doing, or are you going to contract it out?
We'd have to pay somebody to do that. We'll do it ourselves.
Yeah, it's all in-house.
Well, Donna has a whippy-dippy sewing machine. You know, she's just waiting for a project.
You missed the story. They destroyed the flag. We don't need a sewing machine. We need to destroy the Union Jack.
Okay.
But right. You know, you're right. We need a sewing.
Well, you got
a
sewing letters.
Yeah,
do something.
We got it. We putting it together. We pulled the trigger, ordered, not waiting on anybody.
Well, how did that story come up?
You know, I don't even remember. Do you, Nick? He just started. Oh, I know what it was. Because Nick's got a pirate flag. And were we talking about flags, Nick? Was that it?
Yeah, we were talking about flags, and I was talking about how, you know, years ago I used to be interested in flags, like the symbols on them, and, you know, what this stood for, or why is that there, and looking at the historical flags. And, you know, I was talking about the Gadsden, and we were talking about the porcupine flag, the Don't Tread on Me Free State Project flag. And Butler said, well, you know, he's definitely not a statist. He's like, well, you know, the only flag that I've ever liked was this Huntington flag. And I have one of those in my office, and I have one at home, and I'd never heard of it before. I've seen that picture before, but I didn't know the story behind it. And it's really cool. And I don't know why, Drew, don't you think we could tell them how the Huntington flag, like what they did with it, or no?
No, what did they do with it?
No, what they did with the red flag.
I don't know what they did with it. I just Googled this. I Googled this for the first time last night.
Well, as soon as somebody types Huntington flag into Google, they're going to realize that they took this red flag and then they took all those white strips from the Union Jack and then they spelled the word Liberty.
I got a picture of it up on the screen right now. It's just a red flag with white Liberty underneath it.
Yeah, and when we were looking last night, we were looking for like an actual picture of it, and all we were finding was, you know, what you're showing there is just the image. You know, I mean, that's just some generic text on red back. I mean, that's done in Photoshop or Paint or whatever. We were looking for a real picture of it. So actually, that's what we need to call Butler and say, can you take a picture of the one in your office for us just so we can kind of see what he's doing? Because you can't buy it on, you know, even these historical flag places don't sell this design. It wasn't something that was mass done.
You know, one thing that another thing I thought was interesting, he's a law professor, you know, at Southwestern University in LA, and he's a constitutional law professor. And he was saying, yeah, we need to do away with this constitution, you know, law thing altogether. It's a waste of time because it doesn't mean anything. I mean, he's really advocating being real butthead. You get towards you're a hardcore anarchist over your entire life. You get into the last years, you're going, you know what? I'm going to be even hardcore more. So all right, cool. So Butler's in that mindset. And then what's amazing is his wife, Jane, is just as much that way. And she was one of the speakers at one of our Freedom Summits too, talking about women in the movement and role they've played and so on. So, you know, you don't have to be dragging her along. She's right there. So it's great you guys got to spend time with both of them. And tell me about what your presentation's going to be for this Agora Unconference. You know, Nick, what do you got planned for that?
Well, we're going to hopefully we'll get you to come in for a little bit and tell the story that you've told so many times about the silver bullet, how we came up with that, what we did with it, and where we went with it and the things we accomplished with it. And then Drew and I are going to come in, or maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more and talk about how it evolved into this dime card idea and how that's starting to take off and how people all over the country are now making them. And, you know, we're getting contacts with, you know, some pretty big Liberty spokesmen and spokeswomen that want to do this in their own community. And I was following the Liberty Dollar trial, and I was reading what that lady who's in there blogging the whole thing, what she was saying. It seems
Heather
like
Lewis.
The government is Heather Lewis. That's it. It seems like government is completely stuck on this fact that they're trying to convince people that the Liberty dollars were coins, but Liberty Dollar was very, very careful in everything they did to not call those coins. And if you look in Black's Law Dictionary, a coin is, you know, a round piece of metal put out by the government. We're using coin silver, that 90% silver coins before 1965. Those are coins. Those are put out by the government. I don't know how they could ever say that you know, we were doing anything wrong with it. So we're totally in the right on this. I'm positive.
Well, that doesn't matter, but I encourage the conversation. You know, tell me, Drew, what was, when you explained it to Butler or showed it to him, what was his initial response? I mean, did his eyes light up? Did he go, ding, a light bulb went off? Or did he just goes, yeah, I've seen this before?
Actually, no. Actually, it was his wife that responded to it more and wanted to buy some. And she flips it over and goes, oh, okay, here's the website. Do I just contact these to get them? And you go, no, this is these guys sitting on the floor right here. So that was kind of neat. And so, you know, she bought a few and she really liked him. I think she might have, they might have bought him because they were realizing it was an investment in silver and they know better. And it was like, okay, someone's offering silver, give them money. But I think you explained, and we explained kind of the why and where and how it's an activist tool. And I tried to encourage, you know, both of them that, hey, you know, don't, I'm not hoping you just kind of put these in the junk drawer or put these in your wherever. You know, I'd like you to show these to people, and if you like it, if you think it's a good idea, please do, because that, you know, helps us and helps send this idea, you know, viral around the world, which it's already starting to do.
You know, and the one thing he did bring in, which is interesting, is that he brought in that article about Sedgwick, Maine, of them
I
saying,
liked that.
Yeah, that was cool. And he goes, no. He goes, we're not recognizing any state or federal limitations on us growing any kind of food and trading amongst ourselves. He's really big on that. You go to freedomsphoenix.com right now for today's archive show, and you'll see Sierra just put up pictures of our goats. We have goats, and there's the cute little pictures, and they're eating the grass against the fence right now, man. Get on
it. Well, we got to trade dimes for you for food and product, because we went around Gilbert yesterday trying to do commerce with somebody, and nobody would deal with dimes. No haircut, no 40, no food. We'll have to go to the farm to get it all.
Education. Well, we got...
Do you accept silver dimes?
Absolutely. They're probably mine. You know the thing?
You know, not anymore.
Hey, Nick, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it. And we're looking forward to your next project. There's always a project next from Generation Next. We'll see you again tomorrow on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of freedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readers of freedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.